Today we are going to talk about all things birth plan, why you need a birth plan, what even is a birth plan, how to get started on one, and what not to do. Hey friends, my name is Emily, and I'm your birth advocate. I'm a labor and delivery nurse that has a passion for helping birthers advocate for themselves against the toxic cultures of labor. I teach you the most up-to-date research surrounding pregnancy and birth, give you tips and tricks I have learned in my profession, and empower you to take back your rights as a birther. So welcome. Keep listening for authentic tips and evidence-based information you can count on. This is your Birth Advocate, the podcast. Hey friends, I hope you're having a great week. I have been super busy this week, but I'm excited to be sitting down for another podcast with you guys. I thought this week we would go over something that I rave about a lot and talk about a lot and I'm a big fan of, and that is birth plans. I feel like in my experience, to be a fan of a birth plan and to be a labor and delivery nurse is almost opposite. In my observation, a lot of labor and delivery nurses and doctors sometimes look down on a birth plan, and I'm not really sure why. I think they're just getting defensive. Like somehow a patient having a birth plan means that they don't trust their care team. I'm not sure, but that is not my stance at all. And even if you get a little attitude about a birth plan, don't let that stop you from creating one. So first, I just want to go over what is a birth plan. Maybe you've never heard of a birth plan. Sometimes I ask my patients when I'm first admitting them, do you have a birth plan? And they kind of look at me all like, what are you talking about? A birth plan is a document that you give to your providers and your nurses when you get to the hospital that explains your preferences during birth. It's just really a communication piece. So a birth plan is not a legal document. It doesn't bind anybody to anything, but it gives your nurse and your providers a heads up on what your preferences are and what you'd like to happen during your birth. But that also means that there's still work to do on your part. Just simply handing someone a birth plan doesn't mean that they're still not going to try and persuade you into other things. It doesn't mean that advocating for yourself stops just there. It's honestly just giving the team a heads up. This is where my thought process is. This is the kind of birth that I want. And contrary to a lot of beliefs, a birth plan can be for anyone. It can be for somebody who wants to have an epidural. It can be for somebody who wants to go unmedicated. It can be for birthers who are having C-sections. Anybody can have a birth plan and anybody can benefit from a birth plan because every single choice is just as important as another choice. There's no morality in what you're choosing for your birth. You have just as much right to speaking your choices if there are for an epidural as you do for being unmedicated. I think that everyone needs a birth plan. I think that is amazing in helping you educate yourself on the birth process and understanding what options you even have going into it. And yeah, basically, I'm a big fan of the birth plan. If you can't tell by now. So there are a couple ways a birth plan can help you. The first one, and I think the most important one, and the reason why I urge everyone to have a birth plan, is the education component. Just simply the act of going through a birth plan the right way, which we'll kind of talk about later, but going through a birth plan and educating yourself on your options, on the birth process, it's going to make you more prepared for labor. I 100% of the time would rather have a patient coming into their labor room having a little bit of an idea of what's going to happen. It will make you feel more in control of the situation. It will make you feel safer. There will be less unexpected things. It just gives you an idea of what this whole labor thing is going to be about and what you might be presented with in the process. Some people say that having a birth plan sets you up for disappointment, and I 100% disagree. By doing the birth plan the right way, you're actually setting yourself up to be prepared for the changes of labor. And again, we're going to go through how to set yourself up the right way with your birth plan. The second way that I think that a birth plan helps you is that it helps you communicate where you're coming from to your healthcare providers. It opens up the dialogue to talk about the options and to kind of know from the start, hey, this is where I'm coming from. These are my birth priorities, and this is what I'm going to advocate for. And if you do a birth plan in the right way, then you are confident in your decisions. And I promise you, when an issue is presented, you're going to get more respect if you've done the education and the research behind the birth plan. If there is any sort of conflict between you and your healthcare team, it's going to be clear pretty quickly that you know what you're talking about and you didn't just check a box. You did the research and you're ready to advocate for yourself. That will be received much better, and hopefully your decisions will be respected much better if you come at conflict from that standpoint, and a birth plan helps you get there. So, you know, instead of having to approach every issue as it comes in your labor, you've already given them the birth plan. They already know what you expect. They already know what your wishes are. Now, if your wishes become unsafe, then that gives them a jumping off point to educate and explain to you why their recommendation may be something different than was in your birth plan. But if you've never stated your wishes, then they're just going to probably assume that you're okay with whatever they're recommending, and it's likely to be less of a conversation, more of a one-sided, this is what we're going to do type situation. For example, if you've presented your birth plan at the beginning of your labor and it stated that you wanted intermittent monitoring, let's say that now throughout the course of your labor, during your intermittent monitoring, your baby has been showing some signs of distress. So instead of your provider just coming to you and being like, we need to do continuous monitoring now, because he knows you feel strongly about intermittent monitoring and that was your birth preference, he or she will probably come to you and say, I know your preference is intermittent monitoring. This is what we're seeing during the intermittent monitoring. This is why I think we need to switch to continuous monitoring, and probably is going to present alternative options to continuous monitoring. Like maybe I would recommend that we continuous monitor for at least 2 hours to just get a fuller picture of what's going on. And then if everything looks good with baby, I would be confident in recommending intermittent monitoring again. But when they know that you have a strong stance on something, in my experience, they present the options in a much more well-rounded way instead of just from the side of they're running the show type thing. It's also kind of hard to make decisions on the spot, and there's still going to be decisions that you have to make on the spot, even if you have a birth plan. But when you make a birth plan, you're thinking ahead of these decisions. So when they happen in the moment, you do have a little bit of background on what your initial reaction was to maybe internal monitors or Pitocin or something like that. And so you can take what you know, the education that you have already gotten from the birth plan creation process and the situation at hand, and it'll just make you more prepared to make a decision. You don't feel like you're having to make it right then and there, unprepared, with no background knowledge. You already kind of have a feeling for what you want. So before we get into the actual creation of a birth plan, I want to tell you some mistakes that I see patients make with a birth plan. Number one mistake, hands down, is printing off a template online, checking the boxes of what you want without doing any research behind what you're checking, and then going into the hospital and presenting that. And here's the reason why. The most important component of the birth plan is the education and the knowledge that you receive when filling out the birth plan. If you're just printing off a template and not doing any of the extra work to find out what you're checking off, then when you go to the hospital and they start questioning your preferences, you're not going to have anything to go off of. You're not going to have anything to build that confidence that I was talking about earlier, so that you can stay strong in your wishes and advocate for yourself confidently and appropriately. What you're going to do is get insecure about your wishes because the staff is probably going to start poking holes in your plan. But what if this? But what if this? But what if this? And that's going to make you feel less confident and less able to advocate for yourself. So when you're creating your birth plan, the biggest component is the education behind it. You can print off one of those free template birth plans online, that's fine, but just know before you go checking boxes, you need to do the research behind those boxes that you're checking. Know what is intermittent monitoring versus continuous monitoring. What are the risks? What are the benefits? Who recommends it? Who doesn't recommend it? What's the research behind it? And that can be intimidating, but I promise you, if you do it, it'll make you so much more confident and help your birth go so much more smooth. Second mistake that I think you can make for your birth plan is not getting a feel for what your providers are going to be supportive of, what your hospital is supportive of. And I talked about this in my Picking Your Provider podcast episode, but it's helpful to know what you're up against. It's helpful to know the culture of the place you're going to birth at. So I definitely am a proponent of calling the labor and delivery unit, asking them some questions, getting a feel for what they're used to, and then also talking with your provider, of course, about your birth plan ahead of time. And if they give you any backlash on things that you've researched and know can be done safely, I would bring up that research and ask them why they aren't practicing evidence-based care, if this is what is supported by, you know, ACOG or UpToDate or any of those resources that you've used to look at and build your birth plan. Mistake number three that I think you can make is not thinking beyond your first preference. So a lot of times people will say you're setting yourself up for disappointment with a birth plan because if things don't go your way, then now you're disappointed. And I don't think that if you do a birth plan the right way. You should be looking at your first, second, and third preference for a lot of things just off the bat. Okay, so I really want an intermittent monitor because I want to be able to be mobile. But what happens if intermittent monitoring is no longer safe for me? The next, okay, so if I can't intermittent monitor and I need to continuous monitor, I need to find out, does my facility have wireless monitors? Okay, they don't have wireless monitors, but you know what? That nurse I follow on Instagram has a video on how to move while being continuously monitored. So, okay, so my second option, if I can't be intermittently monitored, I definitely want to be still moving and out of bed while being continuously monitored. And you see how that thought process goes. So the second that being intermittently monitored is not safe anymore, you're not disappointed because you have a plan B. And it helps you prepare for the unexpected. I see a lot of patients come in with birth plans, even if they've done the education behind the birth plan. The second that the first thing kind of dismantles, like let's say that they didn't want to be induced, but now they have a condition and they have agreed to be induced. Okay, now the whole birth plan dismantles. And now, I didn't want to be induced, so I guess I can't do any of this stuff anymore. That's not true. Some things change depending on medications that you use or, you know, some aspects may change or tweak, but you can still use your birth plan. And so having a birth plan that states the first, second, third preference is so helpful in being prepared and managing your expectations appropriately. It also kind of shows your healthcare team, not that this is important, but it shows your healthcare team that you're not unreasonable, that you've thought things through, and that will give you less pushback too, in my opinion. The fourth mistake that you can make with your birth plan is not including your support person in the process. Not saying that your support person has to like help you make decisions if you don't want them to, but they should know the ins and outs of your decisions so that if you're having trouble advocating for yourself, then they can. I also really like when a support person and a patient have some sort of sign or code word or moment where the support person knows to step in and be like, they need a couple minutes or something that they have between themselves when the patient is kind of getting overwhelmed. But if your support person doesn't know anything about your birth plan, they're not going to be able to help you advocate for yourself. And that's your ally. Your support person should be your ally. They should be your biggest cheerleader. They should be there for you in everything during birth. So I'm going to go through in the next part things I think that you absolutely don't need in a birth plan and things I think that you absolutely do need a birth plan that I think are missing sometimes. So first of all, things that you don't need in a birth plan, you don't necessarily need to put your name and your support person's name and your numbers and things like that because most of that all of that is in our charting. And when you hand us your birth plan, we're going to likely sticker it and then put it in your chart. Make a copy, put it in your chart. So that's just space on there, which it's not bad to have it in there, but it's just space on there that's kind of useless. Also, I find a lot of people put in their birth plan, like, I want a healthy baby or a safe and healthy delivery. That's everyone's goal. That should be everyone's goal. You could probably skip that. Things that you need in your birth plan that I don't see very often are preferences for a C-section if it needs to happen. Obviously, that's the worst case scenario for a lot of people, but you still need to kind of think about that and plan for that. So if it does happen, again, you don't feel that sense of losing control over the experience. You still feel prepared for it. You still feel ready, and you still feel like people know your wishes and can respect them. Also, I like to have in every birth plan the statement, please obtain my explicit informed consent before performing interventions. And on the birth plans that I offer, I have that in a couple different places. I have it as an option under cervical exams because I feel like this is probably one of the places that providers and healthcare team members don't get explicit consent. And if you didn't or listen to my very first podcast episode, I talk about the difference between explicit and assumed consent and then informed consent and just uninformed consent. So go back and listen to that if you're confused. But I think it just puts a reminder into your healthcare team's brain that they need to stop and ask permission before they do anything. Some patients don't even know that that's what should be happening. And so it's really easy for healthcare teams to not say, is it okay if I check your cervix right now, and state why they want to do it and what it'll change about your care. It's really easy for healthcare team members to just say, we're going to check your cervix now. That's not explicit informed consent. And whenever somebody's doing something to your body, they should be getting explicit consent in that moment. Yes, you sign consent paperwork when you get to the hospital, which I also talk about in that first episode, but that's not the same as someone giving someone's permission to touch your body. In that moment, you're telling them that you are ready physically and mentally for them to touch you, especially intimate and private setting that labor is. It's important for you to be ready for that. So I always add that in my birth plans as well. And I kind of touched on this, but the other thing I think you need in your birth plan that I don't see ever are that first, second, and third preference, not just the first one. Like, I want you to state in there like the list of preferences that you have and the order that you would prefer them to be done in, because that again gives your healthcare team the heads up of where your brain is heading on your birth priority and what you want. So lastly, we're gonna just quickly talk about how to get started with a birth plan. The first step is always knowing your birth priority, which again, I talk about in the Picking Your Provider podcast episode, but knowing your birth priority is always the jump off place. You may have to do a little bit of education in order to find out your priority, but everyone's birth priority is going to be different. We all know you want a safe and healthy delivery, but there's more that goes into it than that. Is your priority minimal interventions? Is your priority being able to get to a C-section as soon as possible because you have like some fear of that? Is your priority have to do with consent and limited people and limiting touching of you for maybe traumatic reasons? But you need to kind of get to know, what is your priority in birth? What does that look like? How can you support that? Now, you need to either find a birth plan template online. There's lots of free ones. I offer birth plan guides with templates at the end. So basically, I have a C-section birth plan guide and a vaginal delivery birth plan guide, and they go through all your options in delivery and education on every option. And then at the end, have the birth plan template that you can fill out and take to the hospital. Pick something to format to kind of give you that sounding board to jump off from, to know the different options, to give you an idea of where to start in your research. Take that template that you chose and start doing the research behind it. Even my birth plan guide, which gives you basic education on your options, what the option is, how it will impact things, stuff like that, you still have to do some research behind how it impacts your specific situation, what the research is on it in correlation to your specific health risks, pregnancy, birth priority, to really decide if that's a good option for you. So even my birth plan guide templates is just a starting place. it's got more information than just the checkboxes that you can get on some free ones online, but you still need to do a little bit more homework before you're ready to just go ahead and pick the options. Another option is hiring someone like a doula, or I have a consultation portion that you can purchase of birth plan guides, so that if you're struggling to do some of that research by yourself and that education by yourself, outsource it to somebody who is experienced in the field and can help you and provide you the research. They're still not the ones choosing for you or telling you what's best for you, or they shouldn't be doing that, but they give you the information you need to make the choice that's good for you. So for example, in my birth plan consultations, you get the birth plan guides, and then you send me a list of all your questions, everything you want research on, what's going on in your head surrounding the birth plan. And then we chat for an hour. We go through all the different aspects of the birth plan. I answer every question that I can. And then at the end, I provide you with a document with everything we talked about so that you don't have to remember it and scribble down. I want you to be like present with me in the meeting. But I also send you all the research on all the topics that you wanted. So you can look through that research, and I do usually do a little summary of the research as well, but I send you the article too. You can look through all of that research, think about your situation, what we talked about, and then make a choice that's good for you. So nobody should be telling you what is best, but they could be helping provide you the resources to decide what's best. Then after that, you make your kind of final tweaks to your birth plan, and as things change in your pregnancy, you may have to go back and revisit. I recommend starting this process of the birth plan around 32 weeks, but things can still change between 32 weeks and delivery. So you may have to go back and revisit certain topics and tweak them depending on things that pop up towards the end. For example, you've made a whole birth plan and you didn't want to be induced. Now you have preeclampsia and you're going to have to be induced. If you followed my recommendations and you have prepared for more than just your first preference, then you probably won't have to do much tweaking, but you might have to go back and think harder about induction options and how you'd like to proceed with that. Bringing your birth plan to your provider, going over it with them, there may be some things in your birth plan that they don't offer. Like, not every hospital offers a Foley bulb for induction. If you don't know what a Foley bulb is, I do have a TikTok and a reel on it. If you scroll down far enough, you'll find it. But not everybody offers that for induction. And while you have every right to refuse every intervention, that doesn't mean that you can make your provider do something either. Or not every hospital offers Cervidil and Cytotec as an induction method. Some hospitals only have one in stock. So those are the kind of things that you should be asking before you make your birth plan. But that's why it's so important to present your birth plan to your provider around 36 weeks to see if any of those things come up, because then you can go back to the drawing board and kind of tweak based on your facility and what they have to offer. And then when you go to the hospital and let's say you're going to be admitted, you're in labor, or you're induced, one of the first things that I want you to do is hand your birth plan over to your nurse. Your provider is likely not going to put your birth plan in some sort of file that transfers over to the hospital. So have it on hand and just hand it to your nurse and say, I'd like to go over this with you. Any patient that gives me a birth plan, the first thing I do, you know, once we get the initial stuff done, I sit down and we go over the birth plan. Every step of the way, we go through all of it. So I can see where you're coming from. This also helps me kind of assess how much education you've done behind the topics. Not that I'm trying to poke holes in it, just kind of tells me where you're starting from. But it's important for you to sit down with your nurse and go through the birth plans so that they can know how best to support you. So if your nurse doesn't offer this, then I recommend asking them to do it. So that's it, guys. I hope that you learned a lot about birth plans. I will be linking my link tree down below that includes my birth plan guides if you are interested. I'm not the only person out there that does something like this, so I'm sure there are more to check out. Feel free to shop around and find somebody or something that fits your needs. I sincerely hope that this episode encourages you to make a birth plan, even if you think, oh, I don't need a birth plan because I just want to have the baby. There's a lot more in labor than just having the baby. I hope this encourages you to create a birth plan, even if you think, I don't care what happens in my birth, I just want to have a baby. That's all great and dandy, but you will feel safer and more in control of your experience if you know what to expect. And with that, I'll see you guys next week.